ॐ गणतमनन्दस्य जनाजनाशलकया चक्षुसमिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनुभीष्टं स्थितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदमयं ददति सा पदन्तिकम् पञ्चकपितृभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभैभ्य पतितनं पवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः Narada Muni has just very strongly preached to Priyavrata about renunciation. And then Swayambhuva Manu has told him that it is his duty to rule the world. Priyavrata asked, if I take up this responsibility, is this going to get in the way of my renunciation? Will I become entangled? Will it ruin my devotional service? And the answer to that question is, quite often that happens. If one gets involved in material life, one very easily loses his devotional inclination, because one's desire to enjoy naturally increases. The desire, thinking himself and the one who is supposed to enjoy, naturally increases when one contacts with the objects of enjoyment. So Swayambhuva Manu thought himself in a very difficult position, because he could not, his power to preach, to convince Priyavrata, even though he was his father, was not as great as Narada Muni's. And Narada was preaching renunciation, and Swayambhuva Manu was preaching, wanted him to do that service of rulership for Krishna. But then, to change the balance of the situation, Lord Brahma arrived, and he took the side of Swayambhuva Manu, because it's Lord Brahma's job to administrate the universe. So naturally, he wanted Priyavrata to take up the responsibility. So Brahma spoke very, very sweetly, explaining that this was actually the Lord's order. It was the Lord's desire, and no one can avoid fulfilling the Lord's desire. In a sense, we can avoid it. But that avoidance of surrendering, of serving Krishna, puts us in the prison house of the material world, where we are forced to follow the Lord's beck and call very minutely. Just like the prisoners, the lights go on at a certain time, the lights go off at a certain time. Now it's time to eat, now it's time to exercise, now it's time to do this, now it's time to do that. One's life is so strictly regulated. One is under a deeper control, more minute control, than if one would have willingly agreed to obey the law in the first place. So either way, willingly or unwillingly, we have to surrender to the will of the Lord, because He is the supreme controller. Even great souls, even powerful personalities can't avoid this. And nor the processes of religion, of austerity, of developing yogic powers, nothing, there's nothing anyone can do that will put him beyond the control of the Lord. It is impossible. That is the meaning of God, the Parameshwar, the supreme controller. That is the meaning of when we say that Ishwara Paramakrishna Satchidananda Vigraha, that he is the supreme personality of Godhead. Anadi Radhi Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. He is Swatantra, he is independent. And everything else is dependent upon him. Everything else, that is the meaning of the absolute truth. So that is the term that we use to define what Krishna is. We say he is God, but God, the term God just means Ishvara, or controller. But actually he is more than the controller. He is the only independent person. He is the absolute truth. So the Param Tattva, that is actually what Krishna is. That is his position, the supreme absolute truth. So when Lord Brahma so strongly put forward his desire, in one sense it was to break necessity forced Lord Brahma and also Manu to break the determination of Priyavrata to remain fully renounced. It was necessity, because before this time, as long as the descendants of Priyavrata's younger brother Uttanapad were alive and willing to rule, then there was no need for Priyavrata to take up this responsibility. But as soon as the necessity was there, he had to do it. That was the desire of Krishna. So we read up to the point where Priyavrata and Narada Muni both very respectfully accepted the desire of Krishna coming down through Lord Brahma without any malice in their heart. There was no mood of, well, all right, I'll do it, but it's not that I'm going to like it, and I'll make sure that I don't make any advancement, but I'll do it because you told me to do it. I have to do it and I can't avoid it. It wasn't that kind of a mood, like a spiteful child. But no, the mood was very sweet. This is the order, this is what Krishna wants me to do. All right, let me do it with devotion. So we're up to text 22, and we'll see if we'll be able to finish the chapter. Swayambhuva Manu, with the assistance of Lord Brahma, thus fulfilled his desires. What was his desire? What was the desire of Swayambhuva Manu? Yeah.
To look after the world.
Yeah, put concisely, yes. But what specifically in this case? How did he want the world looked after? Who was going to do it?
I don't know.
That's a brave man who'll utter those three words. I don't know.
So,
yeah, he wanted Priyavrata to do it. And one of the reasons was because if Priyavrata didn't do it, he would have had to do it. And he had already given that up. He had given that up, and he himself had renounced that, and Uttanapad, his son, had taken over. So Manu himself could now leave home and go to the forest. So he was very pleased due to Brahma's intervention. Now, what was his great desire? Why was he so desiring to go to the forest, to renounce dealing with the world? Why? Because the forest, going to the forest, that signifies performing austerities, difficulties, no longer acting for the pleasure of the senses, giving up the comforts of life. We're all so addicted to the comforts of life. But going to the forest means no comforts. No comforts in eating, no comforts in sleeping, no mating. No defending. Depending on Krishna, because in the forest, how can you defend? You know, if tigers attack you or something like that, what are you going to do? What will you do? Die. That's what you'll do. Well, sometimes the satyrs in the forest, they'll, we see in some parts of some forest, they carry little axes. Some types of sadhus. But But one has to depend on Krishna. That is the point. One has to learn this dependence on God, on Krishna. Rake Krishna Mare Ke, Mare Krishna Rake Ke. Krishna is going to protect me, then I'll be safe. If Krishna is not going to protect me, then how can I protect myself? So what is the lure of going to the forest? It's certainly not for comfort. So there are two sides to it. One side is the desire to attain the sweetness of spiritual realization, which one really does have to give up the desire to enjoy, to attain. And the other side is that material life is misery. All that attempt for comfort and pleasure simply causes suffering, actually. So Prabhupada explains in his purport, material affairs have herein been compared to an ocean of poison, not sweet rice. They have been described in a similar way by Srila Narottama Das Thakur in one of his songs. Samsara bishanale divanishiyandale. Day and night I burn in this ocean of poison. Judaite na kainu upai. My heart is always burning in the fire of material existence. And I have made no provisions for getting out of it. Rather, I just make provisions for making myself comfortable within it. Goloke da prema dana hari nama sankirtana ratina danmilo kenetai. Actually, Prabhupada was once asked what his favorite song was. And this song was his response. Hari Hari Bifale. The only remedy for this ocean of poison is Harinama Sankirtan, the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Where does this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra come from? It is imported from the spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan, Golokeda Premadana, Harinama Sankirtan. But how unfortunate I am that I have no attraction for this. I have so many attractions in this world. I want to avoid this because I think it's going to cause me suffering. I want to bring that closer because I think it'll give me pleasure. Pushed and pulled day and night, I burn in this. But I have no attraction for Krishna's names. How unfortunate I am that I have no attraction for this. Manu wanted to seek shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord, and therefore when his son Priyavrata took charge of his worldly affairs, Manu was very relieved. I don't have to do this again and again and again. That is the system of Vedic civilization. At the end of life, one must free himself from worldly affairs and completely engage in the service of the Lord. So Priyavrata then took over the kingdom. Following the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Maharaj Priyavrata fully engaged in worldly affairs. Yet, he always thought of the lotus feet of the Lord, which are the cause of liberation from all material attachment. Although Priyavrata Maharaj was completely freed from all material contamination, he ruled the material world just to honor the orders of his superiors. Priyavrata ruled the kingdom to honor the order of his superiors. In the Western world, we don't do things to honor the order of our superiors. And the basic reason is so that we don't think anyone is superior. That is the way it works. Don't they know who I am? They're telling me what to do. Even by the time a child is how old? They don't have to listen to their parents anymore. two or something. No, no. The government start, if you run away from home when you're, how old will they start paying you? A lot more than your parents will give you for allowance. You know?
16.
How much do they give you? Anyone know? No runaways here, just checking out. Prabhupada's purport. The word manavardhana. If you want to know what manavardhana means, it's in this verse. The word manavardhana mahatam, just to show honor to superiors. This is culture. It's very significant. Although Maharaj Priyavrata was already a liberated person and had no attraction for material things, he engaged himself fully in governmental affairs just to show respect to Lord Brahma. Arjuna had also acted in the same way. Arjuna had no desire to participate in political affairs or the fighting in Kurukshetra. But when ordered to do so by the Supreme Lord Krishna, he executed those duties very nicely. One who always thinks of the lotus feet of the Lord is certainly above all the contamination of the material world. So his mood was, and this is described in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Chaitasya Savakamani Maya Sanyasya Matpara Buddha Yoga Mupashita Machita Satatambhava. Krishna tells Arjuna to engage your mind in thinking about me while you perform your prescribed duty. So he was doing that to please Lord Brahma. To please Krishna. Mama nusmara yudhyacha, Krishna tells Arjuna. You think of me and fight. Me, anusmara, remember me and fight. Yudhyacha, and fight, not fight and then if you have time, remember me. No, remember me and do your duty of fighting. Now, so Priyavrata surrendered to whom? To Brahma. And his surrender to Brahma was his surrender to Krishna, because Brahma was carrying Krishna's order. So, in the next, so we're up to text 24. From 24 to 20 to 29, Maharaj Priyavrata's activities while he ruled are described. His ruling is described, how he got married and everything like that. Then 30 to 35, his different amazing activities. Just two, one actually, I think is mentioned here. One or maybe, no, a few, more than one. And then the most amazing activity is later on in 36 to 38. And I won't spoil the surprise and tell you what that is. But remember, when I say 36, that will start his amazing, most amazing activity. So now we'll hear about how he ruled, what he did to prepare himself to rule, how he got married, etc., and had children. So thereafter, Maharaj Priyavrata married Bahishmati, the daughter of the Prajapati named Vishwakarma. In her, he begot 10 sons, equal to him in beauty, character, magnanimity, and other qualities. He also begot a daughter, the youngest of all, named Urjasuti. So he ruled perfectly, and he was a perfect grihastha. Now, here's something interesting that's a little off the main topic that Prabhupada puts in the purport, but I'd like to read it. Sometimes we are criticized because I am a sannyasi. Although I am a sannyasi, I have taken part in the marriage ceremonies of my disciples. One of the first times I saw Srila Prabhupada at 26 Second Avenue in 1968, Prabhupada was performing a marriage ceremony and he spoke on this point. He said, I shouldn't, as a sannyasi, because sannyasi is really supposed to be completely renounced from marriage and things like that. Not only his own, but participating or dealing with others in getting them married was not the business of a sannyasi, but yet Prabhupada himself was performing the marriage ceremony. So he said, I shouldn't really be doing this according to the sannyas order, but who else do you have to turn to? So I have to do it. So Prabhupada says here, sometimes we are criticized because although I am a sannyasi, I've taken part in the marriage ceremonies of my disciples. It must be explained, however, that since we have started a Krishna conscious society, and since human society must also have ideal marriages to correctly establish an ideal society, we must take part in marrying some of its members, although we have taken to the path of renunciation. This may be astonishing to persons who are not very interested in establishing Devi Varnashrama, the transcendental system of four social orders and four spiritual orders. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, however, wanted to re-establish Deva Varnashrama. It means a society that's organized in such a way that people become Krishna conscious. And part of that society is that some people will become married. So if they're not married through Krishna conscious ceremonial practices and engaged in Krishna conscious household life, then how will they become Krishna conscious? They'll just completely fall away from the practices of Krishna consciousness and be lost. The human life will be lost. So therefore, a society should be established that has as its principles how to live practically, regardless of one's nature, how to live practically and become Krishna conscious, using that nature to propel one's advancement forward. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur ever wanted to re-establish Daiva Varnashrama. In Daiva Varnashrama, there cannot be acknowledgement of social status according to birthright, because in Bhagavad Gita it is said that the determining consideration of guna karma for Bhagavasa, one's qualities and one's work, not one's birth. Then it is the caste system. Just like you take some liquid, hot metal and pour it into a mold, and then it hardens as it cools, then it is caste. It is fixed in that way. So it is not fixed caste by birth. It is guna karma for Bhagavasa. Kalosudra sambhava. In this Daiva Varnashrama, that should be established all over the world to continue a perfect society for Krishna consciousness. This may be astounding to foolish critics, but it is one of the functions of a Krishna conscious society. So, Priyavrata got married. Perfect ruler he will become on higher order. Perfect king, perfect householder, perfect human. The 10 sons of Maharaj Priyavrata were named Agnidra. Remember that name, Agnidra, because the next chapter is about him. First son. Idhamajva, Yagyabahu, Mahavira, Haranyareta, Ngvitaprishta, Savan, Medatiti, Vittihotra, and Kavi. These are also names of Agni, the fire god. So 10 sons he had. 3 amongst the 10, Kavi, Mahavira, and Savan, lived in complete celibacy. Thus trained in brahmachari life from the beginning of childhood, they were very conversant with the highest perfection known as Paramhamsa Ashram. Thus situated in the renounced order from the beginning of their lives, they never got married, they were fully realized. All 3 of them completely controlled the activities of their senses and thus became great saints. They concentrated their minds always upon the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is actually the perfection of sainthood. And that is really what it means to be a Paramahansa, or a Supreme Renunciant. To always have one's mind focused with great love upon the Supreme Lord. Always, nitya, continuously. They concentrated their mind always on the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the resting place of the totality of living entities, and who is therefore celebrated as Vasudev, all-pervading Lord. Lord Vasudev is the only shelter of those who are actually afraid of material existence. Who isn't afraid of material existence? Only someone who is not experienced about what material existence is. Why should we be afraid of material existence? Why should we fear material life? It promises so much happiness. If you get this car, sleek convertible car, you'll really enjoy. If you do this, you'll really enjoy. If you do that, dress in this way, buy this, you really be happy. Why should we fear this promise, these promises? Should we fear material life?
Danger.
Yeah. Why? What?
Because we've got a body.
Yeah. And not only can it be, it will be. It will die. There's danger at every step, and the greatest danger is death itself. There was something happened to some Australian a few weeks ago. They were somewhere in London or something like that, and they were walking somewhere at some place eating or something, and something from a fell on their head and just minding their own business and fell on their head and they just died like that. Even while you're not stepping, there's danger, it seems. You're sitting. So what is the shelter for someone who is awake enough to actually fear material existence? The only shelter is the constant thinking of Krishna. Because that will elevate one beyond the bodily platform to the spiritual platform when there is no fear. By constantly thinking of his lotus feet, these three sons of Maharaj Priyavrata became advanced in pure devotional service. This is the methodology, the sadhana, the practices for advancing is always think about Krishna, and it is also the goal, the sadhya. By the prowess of their devotional service, they could directly perceive the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is situated in everyone's heart as a Supersoul, and realize there was qualitatively no difference between themselves and Him. So everyone, just put your consciousness in your heart. Can you perceive yourself as no different from Krishna? Who is the Lord of all? And see Krishna's form? No, but they could. So they were secure wherever they went. They put their consciousness on Krishna, so they were always with Krishna, Krishna conscious. And they realized that they were not separate from Krishna. We all have an eternal relationship with Krishna. That is the way to become fearless in this world. So they were at the topmost level of Paramhamsa. There are four levels of sannyasis. The beginning level is called Kutichak, when you're living at home, more or less, but living outside of the home, and your family members bring you food, but you don't go back into the house. It's a kind of sannyas. Then above that is called Bahudak, where you begin to do madhukari. Your family members don't bring you food, but you go begging from door to door, and you take a little bit from a few people. But you basically, you know everyone. There, you don't go outside of the village. You don't have that kind of confidence, and everyone knows you, and they give you something to eat. And then the level above that is Paripajakacharya. Once trust in Krishna has developed to to the degree that one can wander throughout the world depending on Krishna and preaching. Paribhajaka-charja means teacher. And then finally the Paramhamsa, the one who is so realized in that, he's fully depending on Krishna and realizing his relationship to Krishna. He's not in this world, practically speaking, even though he may appear to be in this world. So they were on that level. Continuing about his family, Priyavrata's family. And his other wife, Maharaj Priyavrata, begot three sons named Uttama, Tama, and Raivata. All of them later took charge of Manvantara millenniums. They later were elevated to the position of Manus. Now, what did he do? After Kavi, Mahavir, and Savan were completely trained in the Paramhamsa stage of life, Maharaj Priyavrata ruled the universe for 11 Buddhas of years. That means 11 times 100 million years. That's a long time. Whenever he was determined to fix his arrow upon his bowstring with his two powerful arms, all opponents of the regulative principles of religious life would flee from his presence in fear of his unparalleled prowess he displayed in ruling the universe. So he ruled the universe, but not whimsically, but according to the Shastra, and everyone followed happily. He greatly loved his wife, Bahishmati, and with the increase of days, their exchange of nuptial love also increased. By her feminine behavior, as she dressed herself, walked, got up, smiled, laughed, and glanced about, Queen Bahishmati increased his energy. Thus, although he was a great soul, he appeared lost in the feminine conduct of his wife. He behaved with her just like an ordinary man, but actually he was a great soul. So Prabhupada explains in his purport that a Kshatriya, a warrior, he needs the encouragement of his wife to do his duty. So he acted, Priyavrata acted as if he was henpecked, but Priyavrata actually never lost awareness of his position as a soul. But yet it says that in the verse. This is how he acted. While so excellently ruling the universe, King Priyavrata once became dissatisfied with the circumambulation of the most powerful sun god. So here we're going to get a little hint of what's in store in the later parts of the fifth canto. This is the Vedic cosmology, how the universe is set up. So, encircling Sumeru Hill on his chariot, the sun god illuminates all the surrounding planetary systems. However, when the sun is on the northern side of the hill, the south receives less light, like when the sun is in the northern hemisphere. This happens, it goes to the north at a particular time, and then it's summer in the north, and it's winter in the southern hemisphere, like that. So when the sun is on the northern side of the hill, the south receives less light, and when the sun is in the south, the north receives less. King Priyavrata disliked this situation. We also dislike the situation that it's cold in the winter. But the difference is that we can't do anything about it. So he disliked the situation and therefore decided to make daylight in the part of the universe where there was night. He followed the orbit of the sun god on his own brilliant chariot and thus fulfilled his desire. So he kept it always warm and light. He could perform such wonderful activities because of the power he had achieved by worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's how he could do it, because everything he did was as service, as worship of Krishna. And therefore, because Krishna is unlimitedly powerful, he also became unlimitedly powerful, practically speaking. When Priyavrata drove his chariot behind the sun, the rims of his chariot wheels created impressions that later became seven oceans, dividing the planetary system known as Bhumandala into seven islands. So there are levels of planetary systems in the universe. And One of those levels is called Bhumandala. And Privrata drove his chariot on Bhumandala, and it created, what's it called when there's a chariot wheel in the mud? A rut. Yeah, he created like ruts which became oceans in Bhumandala, and he divided it up, Bhumandala, this planetary system, into seven parts. So in the next verse, text 32, it describes the seven parts. The names of the islands or the parts of the Bhumandala system are Jambu, Plaksha, Somali, Kusha, Kramsha, Shaka, and Pushkara. So these will be described later in the fifth canto when it describes the situation of the universe, how the universe is structured. And I'll tell you in advance, I'm not going to be able to explain very much when we get up to that. But in any case, each island is twice as large as the one preceding it, and each is surrounded by a liquid substance beyond which is the next island. The seven oceans respectively contain salt water, sugarcane juice, liquor, clarified butter, milk, emulsified yogurt, sweet drinking water. All the islands are completely surrounded by these oceans, and each ocean is equal in breadth to the island it surrounds. Maharaj Priyavrata, the husband of Queen Barhishmati, gave sovereignty over these islands to his respective sons, namely Agnidra, Idamaji, Yajnabahu, Haranyareta, Grihapreshta, Meditati, and Vitihotra. So 10 sons, 7 took over the rulership over the 7 islands of Bhumandala, and 3 became Paramahamsas and didn't have anything to do with ruling or anything. They were just absorbed in their relationship with Krishna. Text 34. King Priyavrata then gave his daughter Urjasati in marriage to Sukracharya, who begot in her a daughter named Devayani. So we'll hear something about Devayani in Canto 9. That's a bit away. But we may, if Krishna allows, within 2 years, a year and a half, we may be up to that. Now, after hearing these amazing things that Priyavrata did, made a second son and created oceans and Bhumandala, this is what Sukadeva Goswami says. My dear king, a devotee who has taken shelter of the dust of the lotus feet of the Lord can transcend the influences of the 6 material whips, namely hunger, thirst, lamentation, illusion, old age, and death. They are called whips. Why are they called whips? Hunger, thirst, lamentation, illusion, old age, and death. They're called whips. Why? What does a whip do? It beats one. What's another word for what it does? Or another?
Thrashes,
lashes, tortures, gives pain, cuts one, harms one, hurts one. So these 6 material whips, hunger, whips us, thirst, lamentation, illusion, old age, and death. So one who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord can transcend the influence, the cutting, the thrashing, the torturing of these whips. How? Because he transcends his body and mind. He lives in his relationship with Krishna. These things do not exist in that level. And he can conquer the mind and 5 senses. So is this wonderful? Transcending the whips and conquering the mind and senses? Is this wonderful? What do you think? But Sukadev Goswami says, however, this is not very wonderful for a pure devotee of the Lord. Why is it not wonderful? Because he can do so many more wonderful things. He lives on the positive side. It's like saying a person, he can transcend living in jail. But that's not the wonder of it. It's what he's doing with his free life is what's wonderful. So that is the real wonder, the living in one's relationship with Krishna. So wonderful. Because even a person beyond the jurisdiction of the four castes, in other words, an untouchable, this is the potency, is immediately relieved of bondage to material existence if he utters the holy name of the Lord even once. So this was also explained by in the end of the third canto, just describing the glories of the uttering of the holy name just at the end of the Kapila Muni section. I can't remember who speaks it, either it was Devahuti or Maitreya Muni. So this isn't wonderful, because just by the potency, regardless of one's birth, of one calling out Krishna's name, one immediately goes beyond material existence. That's not even Shuddhanam, not even Premanam, not even chanting in love, but just chanting without offenses. So how powerful is the holy name? How powerful is one, therefore, who takes shelter of the holy name and serves the holy name with his full heart? We'll read Prabhupada's purport to this. Sukadev Goswami was speaking to Maharaj Prakrit about the activities of King Priyavrata, and since the king might have doubts about these wonderful, uncommon activities, Sukadev Goswami reassured him. "My dear king," he said, "don't be doubtful about the wonderful activities of Priyavrata. For a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything is possible, because the Lord is also known as Urukram." Urukram is a name of Lord Vamandev, who performed the wonderful act of occupying the three worlds with three footsteps. Lord Vamandev requested 3 paces of land from Maharaj Bali, and when Maharaj Bali agreed to grant them, the Lord immediately covered the entire world with his 2 footsteps. And for his 3rd step, he placed his foot upon Bali Maharaj's head. So with he took a step and he covered the universe with 2 steps. So he's so powerful, he can do that. So what is beyond his capacity, the Lord's capacity to do? Who can say that the Lord can't, is not able to do something? And therefore, because the devotee gets his power from the Lord, the devotee is similarly powerful. Prabhupada continues later, "Since the Supreme Lord is all-powerful, he can do things that seem wonderful for a common man. Similarly, a devotee who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord can also do wonderful things unimaginable to a common man by the grace of the dust of those lotus feet." Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore teaches us to take shelter of the Lord's lotus feet. Ayi nanda tanuja kinkaram patitam mam vishame bhavam budau kripaya tava parapankaja stitaduli salvesham bhutintaya. O son of Nanda Maharaj, I am your eternal servant, yet somehow or other I have fallen into the ocean of birth and death. Please pick me up from this ocean of death and place me as one of the atoms of your lotus feet. Lord Chaitanya teaches us to come in touch with the dust of the Lord's lotus feet, for then there will undoubtedly be all success. A little further in the purport. Not to speak of a sanctified devotee, even a chandal, an outcast, who is untouchable, is immediately freed from material bondage if he utters the holy name of the Lord even once. Sometimes caste brahmanas argue that unless one changes his body, he cannot be accepted as a brahmana. For since the present body is obtained as a result of his past actions, one who has in the past acted as a brahmana takes birth in a brahmana family. Therefore they contend, without such a brahminical body, one cannot be accepted as a brahmana. Herein it is said, however, that even a vidura vigata, a chandal, a 5th class untouchable, is freed if he utters the holy name even once. Being freed means that he immediately changes his body. Sanatana Goswami confirms this. Yata kanchanatam yati kamsyam rasa vidanata Tata diksha vadane na dvijatam jayate nrinam. When a person, even though a chandala is initiated by a pure devotee into chanting the holy name of the Lord, his body changes as he follows the instructions of the spiritual master. Although one cannot see how his body has changed, we must accept on the grounds of the authorized statements of the Shastras that he changes his body. This is to be understood without arguments. This verse clearly says, Sas Jahati Bandham. He gives up material bondage. The body is a symbolic representation of material bondage according to one's karma. Although sometimes we cannot see the gross body changing, chanting the holy name of the Supreme Lord immediately changes the subtle body, the mind, the intelligence, etc. And because the subtle body changes, the living entity is immediately freed from material bondage. If the mind becomes pure, the body is automatically purified. After all, changes of the gross body are conducted by the subtle body. After the destruction of the gross body, the subtle body takes the living entity from his present gross body to another. In the subtle body, the mind is predominant. And therefore, if one's mind is always absorbed in remembering the activities of the Lord or the lotus feet of the Lord, he is to be understood to have already changed his present body and become purified. Therefore, it is irrefutable that a chandal or any fallen or low-born person can become a brahmana simply by the method of bona fide initiation. Very strong preaching. So this isn't an issue in Australia, but it's an issue in India especially, and maybe one day too will be an issue in Australia. So the frame of reference of this purport was that Priyavratamraj had done something wonderful, but don't think that how could he have possibly done this wonderful thing. By the Lord's potency, he could do anything. Practically a devotee can do anything by the Lord's potency. Lord Brahma, look what he does. He creates so much of the universe. Why? The Lord's potency in service. So Priyavrata did those wonderful things. While enjoying, now we'll talk about the most wonderful thing he did. While enjoying, so he performed his duty and he ruled. For a long, long time. This wasn't after just a few years he escaped. No. For 1100 million years. While enjoying his material opulence with full strength and influence, Maharaj Priyavrata once began to consider that although he had fully surrendered to the great Saint Narada and was actually on the path of Krishna consciousness, he had somehow become again entangled in material activities. Thus his mind now became restless, and he began to speak in a spirit of renunciation. And this is what he said. The king began criticizing himself. Alas, how condemned I have become because of my sense gratification. I have now fallen into material enjoyment, which is exactly like a covered well. I have had enough. I am not going to enjoy anymore. Just see how I have become like a dancing monkey in the hands of my wife. Because of this, I am condemned. And then what did he do? By the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Maharaj Priyavrata reawakened to his senses. He divided up his earthly possessions amongst his obedient sons. He gave up everything, including his wife, with whom he had enjoyed so much sense gratification, and his great and opulent kingdom, and he completely renounced all attachment. His heart, having been cleansed, became a place of pastimes for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, he was able to return to the path of Krishna consciousness, spiritual life, and resume the position he had attained by the grace of the great Saint Narada. So the greatest thing that he did was becoming fully renounced. That is the most difficult thing, especially from a position of great opulence. So we'll read some of the purports here. So he enjoyed his material opulence, and by the grace of Narada, it describes, his mind became restless with the spirit of renunciation. What does it mean when the mind is restless? What's the opposite of restless?
Restful.
Restful. Okay, when one is restful, what is the difference between restful and restless? Yes, that's just what I was thinking. He became dissatisfied, and his mind, because when one's satisfied, one's mind is peaceful, it's not restless at all. So what happens when our mind is restless, we want to change something. But usually, our restlessness is caused by the motive passion. But in his case, it was something else awakening in his heart. That desire to be again situated in Krishna consciousness. So he began to speak in renunciation, condemning himself. So we'll read some of these purports and then bring up the issue. We may have to go a little late today. Or maybe we'll stop early. We'll see. Prabhupada first quotes in the purport to 36. He quotes a verse from the Bhagavatam first canto. One who has forsaken his material occupation to engage in the devotional service of the Lord may sometimes fall down while in an immature stage. Yet, there is no danger of his being unsuccessful. On the other hand, a devotee, though fully engaged in occupational duties, does not gain anything. In other words, if we take to Krishna consciousness, even if we have trouble and we have to leave, we have gained something of substance, something of eternity. We have touched eternal life. And on the other hand, if we don't take to Krishna consciousness, even if we do our duties perfectly, we've gained nothing. It will just, whatever we have gained will evaporate like smoke. If one somehow or another, Prabhupada explains, comes to the shelter of a great Vaishnava, takes to Krishna consciousness because of sentiment or realization, but in course of time falls down because of immature understanding, he has not actually fallen, for his having engaged in Krishna consciousness is a permanent asset. He never becomes like a materialist. If one falls down, therefore, his progress may be checked for a certain time, but it will again become manifest at an opportune moment. Although Priyavrata Maharaj was serving according to the instructions of Narada Muni, meant for going back home, back to Godhead, he returned to material affairs at the request of his father. In due course of time, however, his consciousness for serving Krishna reawakened by the grace of his spiritual master, Narada. This actually happened in the life of Priyavrata. This is a little bit down in the purport. He is most glorious. He is a most glorious example of the truth of this truth that Krishna protects his devotees. In due course of time, he no longer wanted to enjoy his material opulence and his wife, kingdom, and sons. Instead, he wanted to renounce them all. Therefore, after having described the material opulences of Maharaj Priyavrata, Sukadeva Goswami in this verse describes his tendency for renunciation. So there's a question comes up. Was he actually renounced all the time? Just thinking of Krishna and like an actor in a play? Just engaging in his kingly duties? Not identifying at all? Or did he get involved mentally and adopt an enjoying spirit? So sometimes one is said and sometimes another. We'll speak about it a little later. And then he criticized himself he became like a dancing monkey in the hands of his wife, he said. Because of this I'm condemned. So one thing we can understand clearly is that he felt himself like this. This is the nature of an exalted soul. He feels himself very, very, very fallen and contaminated. We see this example in all exalted souls, from Srila Prabhupada to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, through the disciplic succession, all the way up. Krishnadas, Kaviraj, Goswami. So many, everyone, all exalted souls see a fault in themselves where there is no fault, practically speaking. But what do conditioned souls do? They see the faults in everyone else. Actually, it's just projecting their own faults, practically speaking. Prabhupada's purport. How condemned is the advancement of material knowledge? How condemned is the advancement of material knowledge can be understood from the behavior of Maharaj Priyavrata. He performed such wonderful acts as creating another sun which shined during the night, and creating a chariot so great that its wheels form vast oceans. These activities are so great that modern scientists cannot even imagine how such things can be done. Maharaj Priyavrata acted very wonderfully in the field of material activities, in the material field of activities. But because he was dealing in sense gratification, ruling his kingdom and dancing to the indications of his beautiful wife, he personally condemned himself because he felt that he had become entangled in material life. And then a little later down the road, because Prabhupada, so he felt himself entangled in material life, therefore having neglected his spiritual life, so he condemned himself. So therefore, how condemned are materialists who aren't even aware of their spiritual life and who think that the purpose of existence is to enjoy, 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 even though they are being whipped continuously, and they all ultimately become dancing monkeys. Prabhupada continues, from a spiritual point of view, a great kingdom, beautiful wife, and wonderful material activities are all impediments to spiritual advancement. Maharaj Priyavrata had served the great sage Narada sincerely. Therefore, even though he had accepted material opulence, he could not be deviated from his own task. He again became Krishna conscious. So did he leave Krishna consciousness and again become Krishna conscious? Or was he always Krishna conscious, always thinking of the Lord? Both are said, actually. But we'll discuss it a little later. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Neha Vikrama Nasosti Pratyavayana Vidyate Thalpamapyasya Namasya Chayatema Tobayat. In devotional service, there is no loss or diminution. And even a small service rendered in devotional life is sufficient to save one from the greatest danger. Such renunciation as Maharaj Priyavrata's is possible only by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Generally, when people are powerful, when they have a beautiful wife, a beautiful home, material popularity, they become more and more entangled. Priyavrata Maharaj, however, having been completely trained by the great sage Narada, revived his Krishna consciousness in spite of all impediments. So we'll just, and then the last, yes. We'll just read some of this purport, and then we'll leave the last three verses describing Priyavrata till next week. So he gave up his kingdom and performed austerities and resumed his position. And then Prabhupada explains in his purport. As enunciated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his Shikshastak, Cheto Dharpana Marjanam Bhava Mahadavagnina Vapanam, as soon as one's heart is cleansed, the blazing fire of material existence is immediately extinguished. Our hearts are meant for the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This means that one should be fully Krishna conscious, thinking of Krishna as he himself advises, man manabhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. This should be our only business. One whose heart is not clean cannot think of the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Lord. But if one can once again place the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his heart, he very easily becomes qualified to renounce material attachment. Mayavadi philosophers, yogis and jnanis tried to give up this material world simply by saying, Brahma Satyam Jagan Mitya, the world is false, there is no use of it, let us take to Brahman. Such theoretical knowledge will not help us. If we believe that Brahman is the real truth, we have to place within our hearts the lotus feet of Sri Krishna, as Maharaj Ambarish did, Savai Mana Krishna Padaravindayo. One has to fix the lotus feet of the Lord within his heart. Then he gets the strength to be freed from material entanglement. Maharaj Priyavrata was able to give up his opulent kingdom, and he also gave up the association of his beautiful wife as if she were a dead body. However beautiful one's wife and however attractive her bodily features, one is no longer interested in her when her body is dead. We praise a beautiful woman for her body, but that same body, when bereft of a spirit soul, is no longer interesting to any lusty man. Maharaj Priyavrata was so strong by the grace of the Lord that even though his beautiful wife was alive, he could give up her association exactly like one who is forced to give up the association of a dead wife. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Nadanam, Nadanam, Nasundarim, Kavitam Va, Jagadisha Kamani, Mama Janmani, Janmani Shire, Bhavatad Bhakti Rahaitiki Tai. O Almighty Lord, I have no desire to accumulate wealth, nor do I desire beautiful women, nor do I want any number of followers. I only want your causeless devotional service, birth after birth. For one who desires to advance in spiritual life, attachment to material opulence and attachment to a beautiful wife are two great impediments. Such attachments are condemned even more than suicide. Therefore, anyone desiring to cross beyond material nescience must, by the grace of Krishna, be freed from attachment to women and money. When Maharaj Priyavrata became completely free from these attachments, he could again peacefully follow the principles instructed by the great sage Narada. So was he attached or wasn't he attached? On one side, he was a complete renunciant before, trained by Narada Muni, and he didn't want to get involved in material life at all. He wanted to stay far from it, free from it, aloof from it. But on higher order, he took up the service. So sometimes it is described that he took it up just as a service mind focused on Krishna. And sometimes, as we have heard, it describes that he became entangled, at least somewhat, with an enjoying spirit. So what do we learn from this? So we could say that Maharaj Priyavrata was just humble and he actually didn't get entangled and he was a great soul. So that may be right. But according to other indications, maybe he did become entangled, controlled. Somehow or another, his mind became somewhat absorbed in the feeling, I'm the king, this is my wife, I have power. Let me enjoy. Maybe that happened a little bit too. He says it, maybe that's his humility, or maybe he actually became entangled. But in any case, what we're really supposed to learn from this is that if one takes up a service in bhakti to please Krishna, even if one does become somewhat contaminated, even if it happens, Krishna is there and and he will make renunciation come alive in the heart. Therefore, the devotee need not fear, because he is not alone. He is not going by his own power. He is not limited. The jnani must keep fully away from the material world. But no one can keep fully away from the material world. Where will we go to keep fully away from the material world? We have to breathe. Where will we go? Where will we go? Because we'll still be in the material world. So there is so much fear that must be in the heart of everyone other than a devotee. Because a devotee has his desire only to please Krishna. So therefore, Krishna bhakti nishkamata eva shanto. The devotee is the one, because he has no desires, not even to be renounced, quote renounced. Then he is peaceful. His only desire is to please Krishna by pleasing the Vaishnavas, guru, representatives of Krishna. He'll do anything to please them. Look what Priyavrata did. He was a renunciate. He took up being the least renounced position of all. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wouldn't even talk to a king. Renunciates are not supposed to even deal with royalty because it's so contaminating. But to speak of being the king. So therefore, that is the real lesson, glorification of bhakti here. Bhakti is so wonderful that even if whatever one does with devotion in Krishna's service, one is protected. And whatever one gains, it is his forever. So there is no loss or diminution. Okay. So it's interesting that there are three verses glorifying Maharaj Priyavrata that are in the last three verses of the chapter. I won't save those for next time, but out of the three, the most wonderful one, it says that he renounced everything. Because one can't do that without Krishna. Krishna's potency behind him. Okay. So late, everyone is so patient. Thank you very much. So next week we're going to attempt to do a chapter a day, because Prabhupada's purports are very short very often. So we're going to be starting to move quite quickly now. So we'll see how we go. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Priyavrata Maharaj ki jai, Narada Muni ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Nitai Gaur Brihmanandi.